This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 790 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. The Israeli army continues to kill and injure Palestinians across the Gaza Strip in spite of the October 10th so-called ceasefire. Sniper fire, tank shelling, drone strikes, and aerial attacks are routine and incessant, especially in areas east of the vague and invisible yellow line demarcated by Israel. The United Nations Humanitarian Office stated on November 27th that in the areas beyond the so-called yellow line, which comprises more than 50% of the Gaza Strip, quote, daily detonations of residential buildings continue to be reported and access to humanitarian assets, public infrastructure, and agricultural land remains restricted or altogether barred. Access to the sea remains prohibited, the UN added. The UN's Children's Fund, UNICEF, stated on November 21st that at least 67 children have been killed in Gaza since the ceasefire took effect, an average of nearly 2 children killed per day, and dozens more have been injured. On Wednesday, December 3rd, at least 5 Palestinians, including 2 children, were killed by an Israeli drone strike on tents housing displaced people in Al-Mawasi, west of Khan Yunus. Footage by Mahmoud Bassam shows tent shelters on fire as people rush to rescue those trapped in the flames. Also on Wednesday, the Wafa news agency reported that a Palestinian man was shot and killed by Israeli fire in the Zeytoun neighborhood of Gaza City. Maha Husseini, journalist and researcher with Euromed Human Rights Monitor, stated on Wednesday that, quote, Israeli tanks have advanced into Gaza City, reaching the Shajaiya roundabout in the east, just a short distance from the city center. This is around 700 meters west of the actual yellow line that was agreed on. Israel's yellow line shifts daily, swallowing more of Gaza's land and quietly forcing hundreds of families from their homes. Israel is exploiting the decline in media coverage of its genocide in Gaza, she said. Israeli army vehicles were reported opening fire in the eastern part of the Burej refugee camp in central Gaza on Tuesday, killing at least one person. On November 29th, an Israeli quadcopter drone targeted and killed 2 young boys, 9-year-old Fadi Abu Assi and his 10-year-old brother Juma Abu Assi, in the Bani Suhaila neighborhood of Khan Yunus. The boys were reportedly gathering firewood to sell in order to buy food as well as medical supplies for their disabled father. In a video report by journalists Doa Mohammed and Samar Al-Boji, the boy's father says they had eaten breakfast and gone into town to earn a few shekels before his checkup the next day when the drone targeted them. CNN said that he was, quote, waiting for them to return so he could set the table, when nearby residents rushed to his shelter saying 2 kids had been targeted and killed by Israeli troops. Are they my children? He recalled asking. An agonizing wait ensued as he went to identify the bodies. I removed the shroud and hugged them. My little Juju's head was blown off. God rest his soul. His arms were severed and parts of his torso were gone, he said. Fadi's right hand and left leg were cut off, he added, according to CNN. The Israeli army admitted it had carried out the strike, calling the small children, quote, 2 suspects who crossed the yellow line, conducted suspicious activities on the ground, and approached IDF troops operating in the southern Gaza Strip, posing an immediate threat to them. Following the identification, the Israeli Air Force eliminated the suspects in order to remove the threat, the army said. In the week before, on November 22nd, Israel carried out a series of attacks across Gaza, killing more than 20 Palestinians. Footage from Drop Site News' Abed Sabah shows the aftermath of an Israeli strike on a busy Gaza City intersection that killed 5 people. The Israeli army also attacked homes and shelters in Deir Abalah and Nusayrat in central Gaza. reporter Musab al-Sharif filmed a residential building on fire after an Israeli airstrike on the Nasser neighborhood of Gaza City, which killed at least four Palestinians. On November 30th, the Gaza government media office stated that over the 50 days since the ceasefire came into effect, Israel has committed more than 590 separate violations, killed more than 350 Palestinians, and injured at least 900. The media office stated that these violations include 164 direct shooting incidents targeting civilians, homes, residential neighborhoods, and displaced persons' tents, 25 incursions by occupation vehicles into residential and agricultural areas, crossing the temporary yellow line, 280 shelling and bombardment operations by land, air, and artillery, and 118 demolitions of homes and civilian infrastructure. Israel's blockade of essential humanitarian aid, food, fuel, medicine, medical supplies, and infrastructure and construction materials remains firmly in place as Palestinians struggle to get their basic needs met during the harsh winter months. The UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, stated this week that Israel is blocking around 6,000 trucks full of food and relief supplies, including shelter materials and blankets, enough to meet Gaza's needs for three full months. UNICEF stated this week that high levels of malnutrition continue to endanger the lives and well-being of children in the Gaza Strip, compounded by the onset of winter weather accelerating the spread of disease and increasing the risk of death among the most vulnerable children. The agency's director, Catherine Russell, said on November 28th that despite some progress, quote, thousands of children under the age of five remain acutely malnourished in Gaza, while many more lack proper shelter, sanitation, and protection against winter. More food supplies have entered Gaza in recent weeks, driving down market prices and improving families' access to food. However, many essential items, particularly animal-source foods, remain unavailable or unaffordable for most, UNICEF added. Meanwhile, healthcare workers in Gaza are reporting that the ongoing shortages of medicine and medical equipment are entrenching the collapse of what's left of the healthcare system. Israel's restrictions on aid entry mean hospitals remain overstretched with critically injured and malnourished patients, and medical supplies have still not meaningfully increased since the start of the ceasefire agreement, stated the British charity Medical Aid for Palestinians, or MAP. Quote, less than 5% of the aid offloaded from trucks in Gaza has been medical supplies, despite the immense needs faced by hospitals following 2 years of Israel's genocide, the group stated on November 27th. Staff at three hospitals supported by MAP report facing severe shortages in essential drugs and supplies, including IV fluids, anesthesia medications, gauze, and vital drugs for chronic conditions. This includes fundamental items required to keep emergency and surgical services functioning. After more than 2 years of genocide and repeated deliberate attacks on every single medical facility, there are still no fully functioning hospitals in Gaza. Ala al-Sharafa, MAP's medical supervisor at Al-Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest hospital, said, quote, there has been no real increase in medical aid since the ceasefire, and the situation has not improved at all. Nasser Medical Complex, the backbone of the health system in southern Gaza, has 42 essential medical items at zero stock and 43 more nearly depleted, MAP warned. A damaged CT scanner has left Al-Shifa Hospital, quote, unable to conduct essential imaging for trauma patients. During the Israeli military's invasion of Gaza City in September, a second CT scanner was damaged. There is now only one functioning CT machine in northern Gaza at Al-Ahli Hospital. This is placing massive pressure on a single facility and forcing clinicians to ration imaging to the most critical cases. Al-Shifa also remains the only facility in northern Gaza providing dialysis services, but is over its caseload, operating 32 machines for nearly 200 patients, Medical Aid for Palestinians added. For pregnant and breastfeeding women and their babies, the health crisis remains critical. Writing for the Electronic Intifada, Farah Samarzaina spoke to Dr. Sara Zain Eldain, an obstetrician-gynecologist at Al Sahaba Medical Complex in Gaza City, who described physical weakness and malnutrition in pregnant women. The following is from Farah's report. Israel's starvation policy during the two-year genocide has severely affected pregnant women, of whom 55,000 remain suffering in the Gaza Strip, according to the United Nations. Quote, most mothers have severe physical weakness to the point that you can see their cheekbones protruding, Zain Eldain told the Electronic Intifada. If pregnant women want to make up for this lack of food by taking supplements, Al Sahaba's complex's pharmacy has only a single type of multivitamin. Essential vitamins like vitamin C, D, iron, folic acid, omega-3, and magnesium did not enter northern Gaza for too long, midwife Siham Aldeeb said. Pregnant women are severely lacking them. The scarcity of food and lack of vitamins, Zain Eldain said, have weakened pregnant women's immune systems and led to malnutrition and anemia, with hemoglobin levels dropping. For more, read Pregnant Women in Gaza Face Catastrophic Scenarios by Farah Samarzaina on electronicintifada.net. Dr. Ahmed Al-Farah, the head of pediatrics and maternity at Nasser Medical Complex, reported this week that more than 85% of essential medicines are gone. Baby formula is still very hard to obtain, leaving premature and newborn babies at critical risk. Reporters Abdallah Al-Attar and Samer Al-Boji recorded Dr. Al-Farah last week.
I'm Dr. Ahmed Al-Farah, head of Pediatric and Maternity Department, Nasser Medical Complex. Today, we want to express about a lot of worry about the collapsing of the health system in Gaza. We are talking about collapsing after the ceasefire. Unfortunately, there is a lot of shortage of essential drugs. Nearly 85% of the essential list of drugs are lost in Gaza nowadays. The food is coming inside Gaza, but the medication, the medical supplies, the milk, the special formula of milk is nearly lost in Gaza. Now we are in the room of preparation of milk for the neonatal ICU in Nasser Medical Complex. As we can see, there is just 5 cans. This will be consumed within 2 days. And this is alarming about the situation in Nasser Medical Complex.
That was Dr. Ahmed Al-Farah at the Nasser Medical Complex. A journalist was killed in an Israeli drone strike on December 2nd. Videographer and drone cameraman Mahmoud Wadi was targeted by an Israeli quadcopter in central Khan Yunis while he was on assignment. Reporter Abdallah Al-Attar filmed Mahmoud Wadi's family and friends grieving over his body and talking about his dedication to journalism. Wafa News Agency reported that Wadi's colleague, Mohammed Abdel Fattah Al-Asli, was injured in the same attack. The Gaza government media office said on Tuesday that with Mahmoud Wadi's assassination, 257 journalists and media workers have been killed by Israel in Gaza since October 2023. On November 28th, the United Nations Committee Against Torture issued their periodic report, finding credible evidence that Israel is operating a de facto state policy of organized and widespread torture and ill-treatment, and that such practices have gravely intensified since October 7, 2023. The report detailed allegations of repeated severe beatings, dog attacks, electrocution, waterboarding, use of prolonged stress positions, sexual violence including rape, molestation, forced nudity and sexual threats, threats against detainees and their family members, insults to personal dignity and humiliation such as being made to act like animals or being urinated on, systematic denial of medical care, excessive use of restraints, the performance of surgeries without anesthesia, exposure to extreme cold or heat, including boiling water, denial of adequate nutrition and water, deprivation of clothing, sleep, and access to hygiene facilities and products, including feminine hygiene products, deprivation of light or darkness, use of loud music and noises, denial of the right to freely practice one's religion in a discriminatory manner against Palestinians and for purposes including the extraction of information or confessions and as a means of exacting punishment, including collective punishment. Adala, the Legal Center for Arab Minority Rights in Israel, along with other human rights organizations, stated that, quote, the committee's findings reaffirm what we and many others have documented throughout the past 2 years. Israel now operates a detention regime that systematically brutalizes Palestinians, strips them of basic legal protections, cuts them off from the outside world, and shields perpetrators from accountability. The committee's observation that Israel maintains a policy marked by organized and widespread torture, collective punishment, incommunicado detention, and enforced disappearance demands immediate international action. Another report this week from the United Nations Trade and Development Agency, UNCTAD, found that Israel's 26 months of genocide in Gaza and continual restrictions, quote, have driven the economy of the occupied Palestinian territory into its most severe contraction on record, wiping out decades of development gains and deepening fiscal and social fragility. The unprecedented collapse, the report states, has, quote, unfolded against a backdrop of long-standing economic and institutional fragility with severe social and environmental consequences. Extensive damage to infrastructure, productive assets, and public services has reversed decades of socioeconomic progress in the occupied Palestinian territory. The resulting economic crisis is among the 10 worst globally since 1960, while the situation in Gaza stands apart, being the most severe economic crisis on record. Some of the statistics that UNCTAD released include a surge in inflation of 238% following restrictions on the entry of humanitarian and commercial goods in Gaza, unemployment at 80%, pushing the entire population of Gaza below the poverty line, and the loss of more than 69 years of human development. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli soldiers killed at least 5 Palestinians during raids and invasions this week. Israeli forces shot and killed 2 Palestinian men on November 27th in the northern city of Jenin in executions that were captured on video. The footage showed Al-Muntasir Belah Mahmoud Qasim Abdullah and Yusuf Ali Yusuf Asasa emerging from a building with their arms raised and their shirts lifted, clearly indicating they were unarmed and posed no threat to soldiers, according to Middle East Eye. The soldiers then shot them at point-blank range. Israeli forces withheld their bodies after the killings, and Israel's National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir celebrated the executions on social media. Al Jazeera reported on Tuesday that Israeli soldiers killed a 17-year-old child, Mohammed Tariq Mohammed Al-Zugair, in the southern city of Al-Khalil, Hebron, after the army claimed he was responsible for a car ramming attack. An 18-year-old Palestinian, Raslan Asmar, was shot and killed near Safa, northwest of Ramallah, after the army alleged he had stabbed 2 Israeli soldiers. Israeli forces raided and vandalized the offices of the Union of Agricultural Work Committees in Ramallah and Al-Khalil, Hebron, on Monday, December 1st, amidst, quote, escalating Israeli targeting of Palestinian civil society and human rights defenders, most recently in the context of the olive harvest season, according to the United Nations High Commissioner of Human Rights' office. UAWC, quote, is one of 6 leading Palestinian civil society organizations designated as terrorist by Israeli authorities in 2021, based on an Israeli legislation that has vague and broad definitions of terrorism and terrorist organizations, which not only risks but has demonstrably led to unjustifiable restrictions on human rights, the UN added. To date, no evidence was provided to substantiate the accusations, the UN said. Licensed under Palestinian law, UAWC has long provided support to Palestinian rural communities and Palestinian farmers facing settler violence and the risk of forced displacement. The attack on the Union of Agricultural Work Committees followed weeks of harassment and public incitement by Israeli settlers and leaders of settler groups, particularly citing UAWC's work during the olive harvest season. This year's olive harvest season is the most violent on record, with 167 settler attacks affecting 87 Palestinian communities recorded as of mid-November. In occupied Jerusalem on November 23rd, Itamar Ben-Gvir apparently ordered Israeli police to raid and disrupt a children's performance at the Al-Hakawati Theater, claiming that it lacked a permit. The performance was entitled Dreams Under the Olive Tree. The Palestinian Culture Ministry said that, quote, this assault constitutes a blatant violation of all international laws and conventions that guarantee the protection of cultural institutions, including the UNESCO Convention for the Safeguarding of Cultural Heritage. Palestinian Culture Minister Imad Hamdan stated that El-Hakawati Theater is a historic and national space embodying the collective memory of Jerusalem and reflecting the resilience of Palestinian artists in the face of Judaization attempts and land expropriation. He added that the raid was part of a systematic policy aimed at silencing the Palestinian narrative and erasing the city's Arab identity, the Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz reported. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, including the one I highlighted earlier from Farah Samarzaina, but we wanted to bring you excerpts from a piece we didn't publish ourselves but wanted very much to amplify, since it is authored by our longtime contributor Yusuf El-Jamal, who is based in Turkey. In his new piece for Middle East Eye titled Overnight, an Israeli Strike Turned My Family's Home in Gaza into a Graveyard, Yusuf writes about waking up to the news that a missile hit his parents' house and killed 9 family members awaiting evacuation, as he says, leaving me with a guilt so deep it feels as if they survived and I did not. Yusuf writes, on September 27th, I woke up at 5:10 a.m. in my apartment in Turkey, feeling suffocated and thirsty. I was uneasy for no clear reason. I reached for my phone to read the latest updates from Gaza. I saw a message in my town's news-sharing group in Gaza that an Israeli airstrike had targeted my family's home. I texted my brother, Aboud, but the message did not go through. Moments later, my mother, who now lives near me in Turkey, called. Her voice trembled with fear as she asked whether I had read the news. I walked straight out of my apartment and down the road to her house. My heart froze and my chest felt heavy. I refused to believe that my worst nightmare during the Gaza genocide had become real, but the feeling of suffocation would not go away. On the way, I called a friend in Gaza. Together, we managed to reach my sister, Sara. That small victory gave me hope that my family had survived. But soon after, Sara told me that Aboud, his wife, also named Sara, and their 2 daughters, Huda and Zainab, had been killed. The airstrike had also killed my sister, Ghalia, her husband, Yusuf, and their daughters, Mariam and Zainab, as well as my brother-in-law, Dr. Khalid. My sister, Mariam, and 2 of her 5 children were injured. I have experienced immense loss during the Gaza genocide, but it is different when an airstrike hits your own home. Something deeper is taken when the place that helped shape you is destroyed. The missile destroyed not only the walls, doors, and floors I grew up with. It felt as though it shattered the memories that lived inside them, too, ones I shared with my beloved family members in that space. A wave of grief washed over me, leaving a hollow ache in my chest. I also felt helpless and guilty. The night before the airstrike in our home, my sister had sent me a list of 24 family members she hoped I could help evacuate. It included my surviving siblings, nephews, and nieces. They were excited at the idea of being saved from the genocide, of living without fear or destruction, of putting their children to sleep without wondering whether they would survive the night. All of that hope vanished in a single moment. Our lives changed forever. Our home was known for being full of siblings and grandchildren, not anymore. Since the attack, my surviving family members have been busy repairing whatever they can in our home so they are able to return. It's better than living in a tent, they say. But now they must live in a house that has become the graveyard of my siblings, their spouses, and their children. I do not even want to imagine what that means for them. In Gaza, people are constantly forced to choose between two bad options. Since the start of the genocide, I have lost 16 immediate family members. Most days, it feels as though those who were killed are the real survivors, while the rest of us who remain carry an unending, overwhelming pain. My guilt for not saving my loved ones increases by the day, and I tell myself that the Palestinians of Gaza, as a community, as so-called survivors, will never be the same. The tightness in my chest also grows with each passing day. The whole genocide feels unreal. To dull the pain and to try to escape from this reality, I imagine that I never lived in Gaza, and that the Gaza that formed me, the Gaza that is gone, never existed. In that world, I imagine my family living in a place where we celebrate their lives rather than their memories. In that world, my nephews would grow up in peace, and their heads and arms would not have to be collected from meters away. In that world, Dr. Khaled would have completed another master's degree in pediatrics. Aboud would have sung for our family and left Gaza, as he always wished. Huda and Zozo would have met my newborn. Mariam and Zainab would have tried on new clothes instead of being buried and burned in them. In that world, there is no genocide, and no political leader doubts Palestinians' right to life. Maybe someday we will build that world together. Those are excerpts from Overnight, an Israeli Strike Turned My Family's Home in Gaza into a Graveyard by Yusuf El-Jamal, writing from Turkey on Middle East Eye. Yusuf is the Gaza coordinator at the Palestine Activism Program at the American Friends Service Committee. He holds a doctorate in Middle Eastern Studies. He's a Palestinian refugee from Gaza and a senior non-resident scholar at the Hashim Sani Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Malaya in Malaysia. He has contributed to a number of books on Palestine, including Gaza Rights Back and Light in Gaza, and is our dear contributor and longtime friend here at the Electronic Intifada. We mourn for and with Yusuf and his family. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. In Gaza, a small team of animators are working with displaced children to make art through stop-motion film as one way to process trauma and tell their own stories. Hanin Kuraz, Shuruk Darwish, and Noor Ajawad of the Animators Workshop Project say that animation here is not just a skill, it is a new language of self-expression, a free space for profound artistic exploration. This short film called When She Left, Life Bloomed tells the story of an elderly man and woman walking together along a quiet road filled with the warmth of memories. Suddenly, a violent explosion shakes the ground, wounding the old woman. She becomes transparent and gradually begins to fade away. From her disappearing body, red roses emerge and drift with the wind until they land and take root and bring color and fragrance back to the barren land once again. The old man remains alone, watching both the loss and the life born from the womb of grief. In his eyes rests a deep sorrow, yet he witnesses love continuing in another form, a rose that never dies. This film was made by children between 9 and 12 years old from Al-Nusrat camp and Deir al-Balah. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.